This is Fresh Air. The new Netflix series, The Queen's Gambit, which drops this Friday, is about a brilliant young woman who crashes the traditionally male world of chess. Our critic at large, John Power, says that the series offers the kind of heroine we seldom see.
Good novels, the saying goes, make bad movies. But you wouldn't know that from Walter Tevis, a skillful novelist whose books have been turned into memorable movies. The Hustler, The Man Who Fell to Earth, The Color of Money. That's why, ever since Tevis published The Queen's Gambit in 1983, fans have been waiting for someone to adapt this addictive page-turner about a troubled female chess prodigy. The Queen's Gambit finally arrives on screen this week as a 7-part miniseries from Netflix. It was made by Scott Frank, a crack adapter of novels. He scripted Out of Sight and Get Shorty, among others, and the writer-director of the Western Godless. Although I wish it was directed with a bit more flair, its story is a good one. The action begins in early 1960s Kentucky, when 8-year-old orphan Beth Harmon, that's Isla Johnston, is put into an institution that keeps the girls in line with tranquilizers. A quiet loner, Beth has two unlikely allies, Jolene, a shrewd African-American orphan played by Moses Ingram, and the janitor, played by the reliably superb Bill Camp. He teaches her to play chess, and though he starts off gruff, he's soon awed by the gifts of a child who can play out entire chess games by watching them unfold on the flickering shadows of the ceiling. When Beth is 13, and now played by Anya Taylor-Joy, she's adopted by the Wheatleys, an unhappily married Lexington couple. Her home life is dominated by her new mom, played by film director Mariel Heller, a thwarted musician and alcoholic who largely ignores her. Then Beth begins winning tournaments and prize money. Soon, this wunderkind is jetting from Vegas to Mexico City to Paris to Moscow, self-destructively cooling her overheated psyche with booze and pills. Her whole life keeps building to a final showdown with the world champion, a daunting Russian who seems Soviet manufactured, while Beth's a true American, moody, improvisational, solitary. You see her aloneness and innocence in this early scene when 13-year-old Beth hands over $5 to enter the Kentucky State Championship and is met with condescension.
Do you have a clock?
No.
We have a clock sharing system. If your opponent doesn't have one, come back to the desk and we'll loan you one. Play starts in 20 minutes. What's your rating?
I don't have a rating.
Have you ever played in a tournament before?
No.
Are you sure you want to do this?
I'm sure.
We don't have a women's section. I'll put you in beginners.
I'm not a beginner.
Doesn't matter. If you're an unrated player, you go in beginners with the people under 1600.
What's the prize for beginners?
20.
And what about the other section?
First prize in the open is 100.
Is it against any rule for me to be in the open?
Not exactly.
Put me in the open.
There are 3 guys in there with ratings over 1800. And Beltic may show up. They will eat you alive.
I don't think it's a spoiler to say that Beth is smarter than those guys. Now, Tevis tells this story with a bristling economy that mirrors Beth's attacking chess style. To make it work on screen, you must either make a stylistically compressed art movie or play everything out. Frank does the latter, and while I kept wishing the series moved faster, 7 episodes is too many, I admire how he pulls off the trick of portraying chess, the most internal of games, by cooking up ever-changing styles to make each match feel different and fresh. Frank enriches Beth's relationship to her mom, transcending stage mother cliches to help us see how Mrs. Wheatley is just one of the millions of smart, frustrated women back in the pre-feminist days. And he wins nifty turns from the men in Beth's life, most notably Benny, the cocky young U.S. champion who carries himself like a gunslinger. He's played by the sensational Thomas Brody Sangster. With her wide-set eyes and mask-like features, Taylor-Joy is one of those actors, like Keanu Reeves, who was born to play otherworldly characters. Here, she's a double outsider. For starters, she's a female chess mastermind, which makes her a unicorn in a subculture dominated by strutting male egos. Beth hates being called a great woman chess player. She wants to be the best player, period. She's also a flat-out genius. This makes her a rarity in our storytelling. It's not that there aren't as many intelligent women as men. Heck, Oprah's as much a genius as Steve Jobs ever was. But our ideas about genius are gendered, or more bluntly, sexist. Even as our pop culture is overstuffed with stories about men celebrated as geniuses, be it Van Gogh, Ray Charles, or Stephen Hawking, plus fictional dudes like Sherlock Holmes, there are almost none about women. You have Virginia Woolf in The Hours, Katherine Johnson in Hidden Figures, maybe the girl with the dragon tattoo. We can add Beth Harmon to this short list. Although her story doesn't escape the usual trajectory of on-screen geniuses, to triumph over the psychic costs imposed by one's great gifts, The Queen's Gambit does offer something exciting. What makes the heroine isn't that she's lovely, charming, or likable. It's that whatever room she walks into, she's always the most brilliant person there.
John Powers reviewed The Queen's Gambit, the new Netflix series that drops Friday. Tomorrow on Fresh Air, my guest will be Nina Totenberg, NPR's longtime legal affairs correspondent. We'll talk about the Amy Coney Barrett confirmation hearings, how Trump has transformed the Supreme Court and the federal appeals courts, Nina's longtime friendship with RBG, and being a founding mother of NPR. I hope you'll join us.